welcome to the Parkinson's Empowerment Podcast, where we hope to help people with Parkinson's live their best lives by listening to others share their Parkinson's journey, hearing from clinicians and specialists, and keeping up to date with the latest research and resources. I'm your host, Robin Barclay, physical therapist, certified exercise expert for aging adults, owner of Safe at Home Physical Therapy and Rocksteady Boxing Victor here in upstate New York, where we see people in their homes, in our clinic for individualized sessions and group classes. We believe movement is medicine, and we want to help you keep on moving and doing the things you love. Hello, welcome to today's podcast. I'm Robin Barclay. I'm here today with Dr. Stuart Gillum. Dr. Gillum received his medical degree from Stanford University School of Medicine and studied internal medicine and gastroenterology at Cornell University in New York City. Welcome, Dr. Gillum.
Glad to be here, Robin.
Thank you. I am wanted to desperately have you here on our podcast because most of the people I work with have Parkinson's, and a common symptom among them is constipation. And it can often lead to last-minute cancellations, which I totally understand. I would love your input and recommendations so people can maybe better manage their symptoms. And from what I've read, it's a common symptom and can often be present well before the onset of motor symptoms.
And that's correct. The current theory is that a significant percentage of people with Parkinson's disease, the disease actually arises in the nerves of the intestinal tract. And the standard progression of Parkinson's can often go over decades. So that constipation, if you question people with Parkinson's and they're complaining about the constipation, they will usually say it goes back 5, 10, 15, even 20 years.
Wow. And now that the thinking is that the GI tract and the gut brain microbiome play a more important role than they thought previously.
That's correct. It looks to be that changes in the microbiome, and what the microbiome is, it's all the critters, fungi and bacteria and viruses and everything else that inhabit the intestinal tract. Something like 10 trillion of them in a normal person, that is actually, the microbiome is actually very important to not only GI health, but also the health of the entire person. And it's changes in the microbiome that seem to then precipitate the harm to the nerve cells in the intestinal tract.
Okay. There is communication from the brain to the gut and the gut to the brain.
The brain is number one, and the gastrointestinal tract is number two as far as the number of nerve cells. And the GI tract is hooked up to the nervous system through two components. One is what's called the vagus nerve. This is the 10th cranial nerve that starts in the lower part of the brain and runs down through the esophagus, past the esophagus in the stomach and into the small intestine and large intestine. And then the other one is what's called the parasympathetic nervous system. And these are the nerve fibers that run from the spinal cord through the nerves that progress throughout the body, but also involve the intestinal tract. And the interesting thing is in the ancient days of my era in medical school, the treatment for ulcer disease in the stomach and the upper small intestine was to cut the vagus nerve, because this reduced acid secretion and allowed the ulcers to heal. Interestingly, people who have had the vagus nerve cut and who start developing symptoms of Parkinson's disease develop it much more slowly. And the thinking is it's because the abnormal changes that go on in the nerves are transmitted up the vagus nerve and to the brain.
Yeah.
As a direct pathway.
Okay.
If that's not there, then they have to go by the much slower pathway, which is into the spinal cord and gradually up through the spinal cord to the brain.
I read that. I actually read that are they thinking that that might be something that they might look at for,
I mean, I guess by the time you're diagnosed, you've already had it for...
That's correct.
You've lost, what, 60% of your dopamine already by the time you're diagnosed? But potentially it could be something where they're looking into maybe if somebody presents with... I mean, there's a lot of research that needs to be done. And like you said, we were talking before the show, it's hard to do for a lot of reasons.
That's correct.
But potentially it could be something to look at for preventing...
I don't really think so. I mean, it's rather aggressive and procedure, which has a number of side effects to it.
Okay, yeah.
So that I don't think that would ever be done.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. One of the other things that I read about was the poop pill. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Something goes on in the people with Parkinson's where the organisms in the intestinal tract change. In fact, there's some very good studies showing that these changes appear to be common across most people with Parkinson's disease. And what we're trying to do is to get your microbiome, if you have Parkinson's, trying to get it back toward normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a number of approaches to that, one of which is dietary. And the other one could be through some variety of perhaps cleansed stool from normal people that you would then ingest. Certainly work has been done in other diseases where you want to try to change the microbiome of actually putting those organisms up into the large intestine through the rectum. Whether that will ever take hold in this disease, I really don't know.
Right. Okay.
So the best way to change the microbiome would really be through diet.
Right.
Rather than through trying to get the other organisms back into the intestinal tract.
Yeah. Okay. So in the different articles that I was reading as I was kind of researching the topic, most of them ended with the best thing to do is to exercise and to eat right and to make sure you have enough fluids. And then they did talk about a little bit about just some, I think, over-the-counter things to help move it along. Most of it was the, I forget what they're called, but the ones that take the water that's in your system already.
Right.
And
yeah, basically, I mean, to change the microbiome, you're really going to have to change your food consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the standard Mediterranean diet, plenty of fruits and vegetables and whole grain cereals and whole grain breads, oils that are things like olive oil, less in the way of meat and certainly less in the way of prepared or processed foods seem to be the way to go. The other thing is adding fermented foods to the diet. So that would be things like sauerkraut and Korean kimchi and kombucha. The whole variety of fermented products seem to also be very beneficial in improving the gut microbiome.
That's interesting. I just had some kimchi last night.
Very good. It is tasty.
Yeah, it is. I heard that, I did hear that so many good things about sauerkraut. So
that's correct.
Yeah. Yum. Good. And then I've heard to stay away from dairy. Have you?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at Parkinson's to begin with, it seems to be associated with dairy, the onset of Parkinson's. People living in rural areas who drink more milk and such seem to be more prone for Parkinson's than people who don't. However, one of the fermented foods that is available is yogurt. And yogurt actually seems to help people with Parkinson's. So I think before we start saying things about dairy, one of the things that goes on, one of the potential causes of Parkinson's is things like herbicides and pesticides.
Yes.
And so if you're drinking milk or eating dairy products that are produced in fields where there are a lot of herbicides and pesticides, guess what you're getting in your milk? So is the association with dairy really the dairy or the toxins that milk may be having in them?
Right.
So I think before we paint dairy with a bad paintbrush, certainly, if you want to get dairy, yogurt, mm-hmm. best way to do it. What you want, though, is yogurt that still has the live ingredients in it, uh-huh. the live bacteria that cause yogurt to be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's often where Greek yogurt is probably more superior than some of the other standard yogurt types.
Okay. Like Activia is one that promotes yeah, that.
That's right.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, I mean, do you have any other recommendations for people to, I mean, I think.
Well, basically the whole treatment of constipation, there's mm-hmm. there's an entity called irritable bowel syndrome, which is probably a little bit more common than athlete's foot.
Mm-hmm.
And that studies there are pretty consistent that to treat the constipation part of it, you want to get more fiber in the diet. So that's, again, fruits, vegetables, whole grain cereals.
Mm-hmm.
Frequently, people with irritable bowel and people with the constipation that goes along with Parkinson's, when they push fiber, they get cramps and gas and diarrhea and all sorts of nasty symptoms. And so what you really need to do is introduce fiber to your diet gradually
mm-hmm.
so that you don't develop the reaction to it that comes along with people with irritable bowel and many people with Parkinson's. Fiber supplements are very helpful. The most common fiber supplement that you see on the market is Metamucil.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Metamucil is it is a tendency to cause more in the way of gas and cramps and bloating.
Okay.
There are other fiber preparations, generally soluble fiber. Many of them are corn-based. FiberCon is sort of the brand name of one of them. They're much easier to take and much less in the way of side effects. But again, when you start fiber, you want to start low
mm-hmm.
and then gradually build it up so you don't develop any side effect type symptoms.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to change your diet, but really, if it's going to make that much of a difference in your life, you know.
And there's several studies going on currently looking at treating Parkinson's with diet. I think we will get a better picture in the next few years about whether diet may have some really significant therapeutic effect on Parkinson's.
Yeah, there's a doctor in Seattle, Dr. Lori Mishley.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's just done a ton of followed people with Parkinson's for
right.
years. And the things that she's found are pretty outstanding as far as diet.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing now is there are several studies which are now controlled trials where mm-hmm. one group of people with Parkinson's is on the therapeutic diet and the other group of people with Parkinson's are on just their normal diet.
Mm-hmm.
And these people will be followed looking for markers of how their Parkinson's progresses.
Yeah.
So I think we should reasonably soon know absolutely
yeah.
that dietary changes have a significant effect.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a bad idea if you're really at a loss to meet with a dietitian or a nutritionist.
That's correct.
Yeah. Talk to your doctor about it.
Right.
That would be, if it's going to make that much of a change in your life and in the trajectory of your disease.
Well, the progression of the disease,
yeah.
that's what we're looking at
right.
in this day and age is trying to slow or halt the progression of the disease.
Right. And we know now that forced intense exercise can help.
That's right.
So then if we can get the diet in check, then,
yeah. And if, what is the major approach to seems to be the major approach to Parkinson's, at least in the medical community, it's medications.
Right.
And there is no data to this point that medications alter the progression of the disease.
Right.
Physical activity and things that simulate physical activity have been shown to slow the progression of the disease. So if you want to slow down your Parkinson's, at this point in time, it's be active.
Right, right. Yes. They can help. The medicine can help manage the symptoms.
Oh, yes. They relieve symptoms.
Right.
And a fairly good study. There was an argument in the medical community about whether starting levodopa carbidopa early in the disease would be helpful or harmful. thinking that levodopa carbidopa might have a certain lifespan of its activity that would, if you started it too early, it would, its effect would wear off before the disease had really progressed dramatically. That study, or that was looked at, there was a study in England probably now about 8 years ago looking at starting levodopa carbidopa early versus delaying and treating with other medications, and there was absolutely no difference in the progression of the disease. However, the people who got levodopa carbidopa early had a better lifestyle, had felt better, and had better symptom control than the people who delayed.
Yes, interesting. And I've heard, and I think actually it was one of Dr. Mishley's Parkinson's School videos that I watched where she talked about, you know, if you were deficient in vitamin C, you would take a vitamin C pill. You are deficient in dopamine. So why not take the L-DOPA?
That's correct.
You're going to feel better. You're going to feel, you're going to, you know, you're not going to be likely as apathetic. You're going to be able to exercise better. So I often, people will come in to see me sometimes who've just been diagnosed and they're, you know, they're it is a personal decision.
Right.
So they're still kind of deciding and they ask me what I think. Mm. And I just say, I say that.
Right.
And I say, if it was me, I would take it.
Yes.
You're going to feel better. Yeah. And, you know, it can just, I see such a difference in people who have all that rigidity and tightness, and I just want to say, try it. And if you don't like it, you don't have to.
One of the problems is that Parkinson's appears to be a what we call in medicine a syndrome, where there are multiple different presentations which somewhat look alike.
Yes.
And in one set of that Parkinson's syndrome, people don't respond all that well to levodopa.
Mm-hmm.
In that group, actually, that's where the physical therapy, where the activity is really much more important.
Right.
And people will find out it, you know, people with Parkinson's that I talk to, many of them have started levodopa carbidopa and have noticed no improvement whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they exercise, they have noticed marked improvement.
Right.
So to be you know, hard saying that you all ought to be on levodopa carbidopa, it all depends on the subset of Parkinson's that you have, but that you're only going to learn by giving it a try and seeing.
Yeah.
And again, like as with treating with fiber, you start low and you gradually work up, watching to see whether you're developing any side effects from the medications that might tell you, hey, I don't want to take this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
My mom has progressive supranuclear palsy.
Right.
And her neurologist didn't even put her on it. I mean, her symptoms were, I guess, fairly obvious to her.
Right. And that's a Parkinsonian. That's one of the subsets of Parkinson's disease. Yeah.
Right. Well, you mentioned, too, before we turned the mics on, we were talking and you mentioned something that I didn't know. That the correlation between diabetes and Parkinson's.
Yes. Again, this is felt to be because of changes in the gut microbiome.
Mm-hmm.
It's been shown pretty clearly that things that can alter the microbiome can also make you more at higher risk to have type 2 diabetes or adult onset diabetes. These changes are probably the same that go on in Parkinson's, because many people with diabetes will develop Parkinson's, and about 80% of people with Parkinson's will develop diabetes. Now, that doesn't mean to the point of needing treatment, but to the point where they don't respond to glucose the way normal people do.
Mm-hmm.
So they have high glucose levels, which is the standard absorbable sugar, and it can develop complications of diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Another good reason to really get that, manage your diet.
To work on the diet, correct.
Yeah, and exercise.
Right. And exercise.
Yeah.
Because, again, exercise has been shown to reduce the risk of diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, very interesting. Is there any other bit of advice you'd like to give, or anything else that we haven't touched on that you want to mention?
Well, I think the other advice is that Parkinson's is a very complex and complicated mm-hmm. disease. And so to have the medical team that you have taking care of you, you really want to be very proficient in the management of Parkinson's disease. My clinical practice was in central New York rather than here in what's considered Western New York. And I referred my patients to Western New York because the Parkinson's group at Rochester, at Strong Memorial Hospital and University of Rochester, was probably the best in the upstate New York. So I think the critical thing is finding a Parkinson's team, which would include dietitians and neurologists and physical therapists and speech therapists mm-hmm. and psychologists to help manage your disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of, we're really lucky to be.
We are very fortunate. All the, yeah.
Yes, and we have a lot of even neurologists that are not within the movement disorder group that are amazing.
Yes,
you know.
Well, the amount of training to do with Parkinson's disease around here is really very superb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and I like you mentioned the speech therapist, another. See the dietitian, see the speech therapist.
That's right.
Because of the whole drooling, which again doesn't affect everybody, but because there's excess saliva and that can affect the way that you eat.
Yeah, and since Parkinson's is among other things a muscle disease, it's the muscles of swallowing and mm-hmm. of speech that get affected.
Mm-hmm.
And the studies are very clear that if you undergo speech therapy, and I guess speech therapists are now called speech pathologists.
Mm-hmm.
We've all changed our names to protect the innocent, as it were, but that people managed by speech pathologists are much less likely to what we call aspirate, mm-hmm. which is that's food going down the wrong pipe and ending up in your lung. And aspiration is probably the number two cause of death in people with Parkinson's disease. So that's where the speech therapy really helps not only improve how you're talking, but how you're swallowing.
Right. Yes. And I can't emphasize enough how don't wait when you're diagnosed. And I get a lot, I have people come here to the clinic. Like one day, a husband and wife came in and he said she wouldn't take me home unless I came here first to physical therapy to have an assessment. So I think I can't stress enough how important it is to see a physical therapist, to see a speech therapist, all of the above, early on. Don't wait until your movements get smaller and slower. Don't wait until you start choking on a piece of food or have trouble swallowing. Get a treatment early on to make things better now to prevent that, to help prevent and slow that even more.
That's correct. And again, that's what's going to slow the progression of your disease,
right.
Is being active and continue to be very active as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, I feel like we could do this every week so we can get on the same topic. But yeah, so come back anytime to talk more about this. I'm sure hopefully we'll get some good response on the podcast, good. Maybe some questions and something that people want to hear more about. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Gillum.
Thank you very much. It's always a good opportunity for me to learn more.
Me too. All right. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you have any questions or comment, please go to our website, safeathomept.com, and fill out the form. Or give us a call at 585-398-6050. Have a great week, and we hope you join us for the next podcast. Remember, movement is medicine. Keep on moving.